Hi, I'm Katie Marquette, and you're listening to Born of Wonder.
And here there is something more than just a transient experience.
It's about being. It's about the things that matter to me. It's about the white spaces between the paragraphs.
Then God said, "Let there be light."
The mistake you always made, Doc, trying to love a wild thing.
Reading is everything. Reading makes me feel like I've accomplished something, learned something, become a better person. Reading makes me smarter. Reading gives me something to talk about later on. Reading is the unbelievably healthy way my attention deficit disorder medicates itself. Reading is escape, and the opposite of escape. It's a way to make contact with reality after a day of making things up, and it's a way of making contact with someone else's imagination after a day that's all too real. Reading is grist, reading is bliss. Nora Ephron. Hello and welcome to Born of Wonder. I'm Katie Marquette, and on this podcast we explore anything and everything that inspires wonder and awe in the world. Starting today with that wonderful quote from Nora Ephron, reading is everything. Couldn't agree more. And I also played some sound out there from some beautiful bird song from a week or two ago. I was out walking the dogs and I actually almost put in my headphones to listen to a podcast while I was out on a walk, and for whatever reason I said, no, you know, I have too much noise going on in my head too often, like I should just take this 20-minute walk without anything in my ears. And so I did, and I'm so glad I did because I heard this, you know, flock of geese flying right over my head. I would have totally missed it as I went through this sort of patch in the road where it's really overgrown with trees. It's sort of like a little canopy area. It was just absolutely bursting with bird song. So I took a little voice note there to save that sound and share it with you. And it's all sort of on a theme here of settling our minds, being in the moment, and enjoying things for what they are, not always trying to make them something else, make them bigger than they are, or better than they are, or worse than they are, just to sort of enjoy our life. I know that sounds a little trite, but that is actually a surprisingly hard thing to do these days when sort of everything seems to have a productive purpose. And I think we can fall into this mindset in surprising ways sometimes, even when it comes to something like reading, something that, you know, maybe something we intuitively know that we love, that we enjoy. It can quickly become part of a sort of productivity obsession. And these are just sort of some insights I've had recently, and I thought that I would share them with you. I thought I would just dive into how we can really enjoy reading again, how we can do that. I know I have a lot of literary-minded listeners, and I always love to hear from you, love your book recommendations. A few of you have sent me some. I know one listener sent me a list, in a letter of books that she had read last year that she recommended. I need to go through those and get back to her. That's another thing I'm trying to do, get back to my letter writing, trying to like really enmesh myself here in the physical world. So I'm going to be talking a bit about that and then just going through, just some concrete tips and advice for how to really get into a good reading groove. So that is the plan today on today's episode. I hope everyone is having a lovely start to March. It's a great month. It's St. Patrick's Day coming up. It's the Annunciation. It's St. Joseph's Feast Day. It's my daughter's third birthday. Lots to celebrate this month. So happy March. It's also that sort of shifting time, at least in much of the world, toward spring. And I know there are some listeners who are, you know, way up north who are thinking, yeah, enjoy that spring weather because we're not going to get it for another month or two. I was talking to a fellow parent at a birthday party this weekend who was from Vermont, and she was saying how March and April can be very psychologically difficult because they are still sort of deep in winter when the rest of the country, much of the country, is moving on into spring. And I am sitting here looking out the window, and it's going to be in the 60s today. I can hear the birds, and I like it. I really like it. Everybody knows I'm a winter gal, but this year I need the sun. I do. I need to get outside. I want to see flowers blooming. I don't want to worry about bundling up the kids. So I'm very excited. I'm energized by it. So I'm wishing you good weather, whatever good weather means for you. So maybe some time to lie out on a blanket, right, and read. Remember doing that? Did you do that when you were a kid? I did. And I'd like to do more of that. So reading, what's it all about? The origins of literacy can be traced back to southern Mesopotamia around 3000 BCE. Ancient Sumerians began writing on clay tablets and subsequently invented, I don't know how to say this, cuneiform script, the first known writing system. So that's, you know, it's a long time that human beings have had this impulse, this desire to express ideas and thoughts and emotions and stories into some sort of written form, something that can be shared with somebody else. Think about what a radical sort of form of communication this is, right? That like symbols on a page become words, become stories, become characters, become information for people. We take it so for granted. And of course, with the printing press and everything like that, that changed everything as far as having access. And then, you know, it's only in the past, I would say, you know, 200 years that even more widespread literacy has become a reality. So reading is a gift. It's a privilege. It is access to knowledge. It's access to so much. It's access to stories that can change our lives. It's everything, as Nora Ephron says, and it's something that we take for granted. It's also something that we can become intellectually prideful about. I certainly can. I really, like, oh my goodness, what an insufferable, like, teenager I was toting around Proust. Like, I had no idea what it was about, but I loved to talk about how I was reading Swan's Way when I was 16. That is so obnoxious, but and that's really not about loving reading. That's about, you know, trying to sort of develop an identity and prove certain things about yourself. And I don't think that we are immune from that later in life. I think we can all fall into that. And even good intellectual pursuits, you know, you set, you make a reading goal, or you're part of, you know, a great book club. You know, I've recommended before the Well-Read Mom book club, a great thing to do, absolutely great. But when we sort of get on these, when we're following a curriculum, we can kind of lose the joy in reading. And I think anybody who is an English major can relate to this. I mean, I had amazing English classes. I had wonderful professors, many of whom I'm still in touch with. I can think of one, at least, I'm hoping to have on the podcast at some point to talk about Shakespeare and how life-changing Shakespeare is. But, you know, so English, studying English academically can be great, but it can also, you can kind of lose that feeling of joy in reading when you are parsing a text to bits and you have to have a sort of, you know, a new criticism lens. You know, you have to be taking apart every paragraph and trying to find the deeper meaning and doing a historical context analysis. And you kind of forget what it was like to just open a book and read a story, right? And so whenever I'm in a reading slump, when I'm like, I really haven't been reading, I don't have the attention span for it, I don't feel good about that, I have a few sort of methods I have for getting back into reading. But one of them is to read books that I actually like and that are not too heavy, not too, you know, I love to read theology. I love to read, books about law and human rights and history and all of that's great. I'm not like trying not to do that. But when I'm in one of those reading slumps, that's not really the right book to reach for. I need to reach for something fun that I'm going to look forward to reading after the kids go to sleep, that I want to sort of sit up and cozy up with a cup of tea. A great Agatha Christie, a good mystery is always a great go-to. Another thing I ask is what books did I love when I was a child, when I was a kid? What books were keeping me up, were were making me excited to read. Do you know that feeling when you were a kid and you just like couldn't wait to keep turning the pages? You'd be sitting outside, have a whole afternoon free, that kind of feeling, you know, to get back to that. And often that can just mean to pick up those books again. And for me, those are books like, you know, I was a horse kid, so I loved my horse books. I loved all the Marguerite Henry books. I loved Misty of Chincoteague and King of the Wind, and of course Anna Sewell's Black Beauty. I loved those books. And then Narnia series, The Hobbit, Wrinkle in Time. These are great books. And as C.S. Lewis, you know, said, if it's a story worthy of a child reading it, it should be worthy of an adult reading it, you know, and you can read it with a lot of joy and enjoyment as an adult, even more so sometimes. I get so much out of rereading Narnia. Narnia is a great go-to if you want to just, you know, I started this whole podcast series by, I think my first episode was like Into the Wardrobe, because that feeling of walking in somewhere, pushing aside the coats, you know, and then like there's a magical world there. That's the experience of reading. That's the experience of a really good story. And Narnia can certainly help us rediscover that. And also in the beautiful way it does, you know, bring us these deep theological insights and everything else like that. But I think you should read it first sort of just as a story. I think we are so primed for stories. We need them so badly. And it can be so easy to fall into our hyper-analytic mode that we forget the power of good stories. Right? So look at what books you loved as a child. What are they? And maybe reread them. Read them to your kids. Read them for yourself. You know, that can be a great way to rediscover stories, to rediscover your love of reading. And the big thing I've been doing that has been so helpful, I've read two books in the past week, which is more than I've read all year, because I've been turning my phone off in the evenings. I turn it off at around 8 or 8:30. I leave it charging in another room. And I don't look at it again until the morning. And just doing that, even though I, you know, I've tried to reduce, you know, my options for scrolling on my phone, even if I'm reading and I want to look up something from the book, which often happens, you know, you say, oh, well, what else did this author write? Or, oh, that's an interesting piece of history that she referenced. I want to look that up, you know, and you look it up. And before you know it, you've spent 20, 30 minutes on your phone. We don't know how it happens, but we all know it happens. You fall, it just happens, you know, or you say, oh, I got a text, I respond to one text, and then suddenly I'm scrolling something else. So you need to just take the phone out of the equation. Just take it out. So that in and of itself is going to like change your life, honestly. we all know that reading has a lot of health benefits. So even if you're just like, look, I'm trying to like get my health in order, which was honestly a big priority for me, there is objective research, and I will link to it, that reading lowers your blood pressure, it reduces stress, it improves sleep, not to mention all the cognitive benefits. You know, it's been shown to, you know, offset Alzheimer's later in life, to keep you sort of mentally with it as you age. And we all know, those of us taking care of little children, you know, you need that intellectual stimulation, you need your brain activated in other ways, and reading does that. So read for your health, turn off your phone, read for your health. And I think when you get in the habit of reading in the evenings instead of looking at your phone, it makes it easier to be less attached to your phone during the day, because your brain sort of operates on a different level. You know, you've been in that one story, you've been in that one book for a period of time, and I think we don't realize that that is quite a radical thing these days, because even when you're reading online, even if you're on Substack or something else, you're reading like six different things, and you're responding to a text message at the same time. Your brain is totally, it's all over the place. It's totally fractured. It's a very radical thing now to spend 2 hours in one place, to be physically where you are, sitting in your chair, sitting in bed with one book, looking at one thing, is like a crazy thing now. And it does wonders for your mind. It does wonders for your anxiety, for your mental health, for everything. So I think it's important. It's important to do that. So, and then another thing is to just ask yourself, what are your motivations? Why are you reading? Are you reading for, you know, are you trying to learn something specific? Are you trying to, you know, are you trying to get lost in a story? Oh, there goes the baby. Okay, so here's the real life, is that we'll have to pause this and continue later, because real life is fractured. That's why I'm looking forward to reading later. So, okay. Hey, and we're back. And And something else I should mention is that all this month I'm going to take any opportunities to play Irish music because it's St. Patrick's Day month. I'm getting very excited that that October will be here before we know it, and we'll be heading off on a pilgrimage to Ireland. Make sure you check out the link in the show notes for that. That could be a great way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, would be to sign up for this trip. There was a time in college, my college roommate and I, we were watching Mamma Mia. I'm a huge Mamma Mia fan, by the way, a huge ABBA fan. I would play some for you, but the last time I did that, I got in trouble with Spotify, so I won't play any ABBA. And I will, oh, and I should give due credit here, that wonderful jig fiddle music was The Kesh Jig by Craig Duncan, so thank you for that. But I was going to say, my college roommate and I, we were watching Mamma Mia and perhaps partaking of a certain amount of sangria, and we were literally hovering over some plane tickets on our laptop, ready to book a flight to Greece, I think during finals week, that we were just going to sort of, say goodbye to college and head out to Greece instead. So I'm not saying that maybe if you've had a few Guinnesses around St. Patrick's Day, if you happen to get online and decide to sign up for something, so be it. So I'm just saying that sort of thing could happen. But anyway, just don't do it. If you have some sort of a crazy thing going on in October, we don't have finals anymore, right? October, it's great. It's your summer travels are over. You're ready to hit the road and head on out to Ireland. Anyway, total aside there, that's the way life is now. I'm looking at, this is actually perfect. My older daughter is in quiet time and she's reading her books. She loves books. She can't read obviously yet, but she loves to look at books. She loves to pretend to be reading them out loud. She loves to listen to books. It's amazing actually how much she loves them, and I love that for her because that's going to be such a resource for her throughout her life. So cultivating a love of books, they say that just having books in your house, like you know forget even reading to your kids, which of course is so important, but just having them around can be a great predictor of later literacy and love of books and love of reading, because we're interested in the things that surround us, right? And if you read, if your kids see you reading, they're going to be interested in reading themselves. There's a great, it was like a New Yorker cartoon or something I saw once where it was like a parent on their phone and their kid was next to them on a phone, and she turns to the parent next to them and was like, how do you get your kids to read? And that parent is reading a book, and then their kid is reading a book too. So that's really important, so cultivating a love of reading for yourself, rediscovering it for yourself is like a big benefit to your family. I also remember reading once about, even when your kids are really little, even when they're babies, it can be great to read to them just because then they will associate having a book in your hands with being close to somebody, with being comfortable, with, snuggling, positive emotions are going to be associated with books. So right now it's a little bit of a struggle reading with our one-year-old. She really likes books. She's interested in them, but she also really wants to throw them. So it's not always that like blissful moment sitting there reading with the kids, but I'm just saying that it can be really important, a sort of a family culture kind of thing. And so like all things, when you think that you're cultivating something just for yourself, it's really a benefit to other people as well. I did, before I wrapped up on this, I wanted to bring up, I titled this episode Reading for Reading's Sake, which is of course a play on the famous, art for art's sake, a phrase which had been circulating in the intellectual circles of Paris since the beginning of the 19th century, but it was Théophile Gautier, who fully articulated its meaning, as we understand it now, at least in his 1832 poetry volume Albertus and in his 1835 novel Mademoiselle de Maupin. And he said that using this phrase was to say that art didn't have to serve a didactic or political purpose. And actually, Edgar Allan Poe argues this really well in his essay, The Poetic Principle, in 1850. He writes that we have taken it into our heads to write a poem simply for the poem's sake, and to acknowledge such to have been our design would be to confess ourselves radically wanting in the true poetic dignity and force. But the simple fact is that would we but permit ourselves to look into our own souls, we should immediately there discover that under the sun there neither exists nor can exist any work more thoroughly dignified, more supremely noble than this very poem. This poem per se, this poem which is a poem and nothing more, this poem written solely for the poem's sake. So art for art's sake became a bohemian creed in the 19th century, a slogan raised in defiance of social realism, communism, the Marxist aim of politicizing art. Art for art's sake said that art was valuable as art, that there was no other reason for it. There didn't have to be a utilitarian purpose for it. So I think that reading for reading's sake can be the same idea, right? That you don't have to be reading for school. You don't even have to be reading for a book club. You don't have to be reading to be a quote unquote smart person. Reading for reading's sake, for the sheer enjoyment of reading, I think is really, really important. And it's again, not to dismiss these other purposes of reading, you know, the sort of you know, learning new things, being a part of a group, challenging ourselves, reading something really tough, like something that's sort of a difficult read, you know. But I think for many of us, especially if you're, you know, a tired mom or something, or you're working really hard, things are, you know, lots are going on, it can be really important to sort of rediscover that initial just joy of reading. And I'm often surprised by how often I lose that for somebody who loves to read so much. And so one of my other things I've been doing, one of my tips, I guess, to rediscover this love of reading is the classic sort of library wander, you know, just like go to your public library and just wander around and, you know, flip through pages, look at covers, judge a book by its cover, read the backs, you know, maybe you've heard of something, maybe you haven't, but just pick up a few books, just pick them up. There's no, you know, if you don't like it, no problem. You're not buying the book, just check it out, you know, start reading it. Maybe you like it, maybe you don't, return it right away if you don't want to read it. I've discovered some really fun books that way. And it, again, it's no pressure. And that's a really fun way to just fall into good stories and maybe read something that you otherwise wouldn't have. It's an author that's not on your radar, or, you know, it hasn't been recommended to you, but you can discover some really good books that way. I'll tell you the two books I recently read, just the books I read this week. One was called A Fine Imitation by Amber Brock. And this was a book set in the 1920s. It was all about, you know, a sort of classic story of a rich woman trapped in a loveless marriage, and you know, these things that happened in college, and she falls in love with an artist, and I won't say anything else besides that. But you know, it was fun. I read it quickly. I felt like I was in the 1920s. I liked it. And then I read The Secret Book of Flora Lee by Patty Callahan Henry. I really enjoyed this one in particular. It was a World War II book, and I love reading about that period of history. I really love novels set during World War II. Something about, you know, I think it was a very, you know, it was such a high drama time, right? Good and evil were really playing out on the world stage. So I think it makes for some very compelling reading. So this book is all about the evacuations that took place. And of course, if you read Narnia, that's why the Pevensey children are in the countryside to begin with, is because they've been evacuated from London. And this was Operation Pied Piper. They took all the children out into the countryside from London to save them from the terrible bombings. A very controversial program and idea, had, you know, varying effects. And anyway, it explores the story of these two sisters who are evacuated into the countryside outside of Oxford, and the experiences they have there. And one of the girls goes missing. And so that's the story. So, you know, and again, I don't want you to read these books and be like, well, okay, these are okay. You know, this is not like high literature. This is, you know, they're just fun to read. They're good books. You know, good story, something you can flip through, get lost in the evening when your brain is fried and you just want to read something. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be these books, but these sort of books can be great to just like get you going again. I really like Kristen Hanna for the same reason. She wrote The Nightingale, The Great Alone, and those are pretty intense books actually, but again, just great stories, right? Just like a great story to fall into. So yeah, the classic library wander, highly recommend. So the library wander, asking yourself why you're reading, what is the purpose of reading, reading like a child again with that kind of delight, discovering stories that delight us, and just turning off the phone, those are my tips. So I hope that you, fall into some good reading this spring. If you have any good books you'd like to recommend, I always enjoy that. You can find me over on Substack. You can find me at boredofwonder.com. And like I said, check out the pilgrimage. I'm going to try to do some fun Irish things this month. If there's anything particular about Ireland that you would like to learn about, myths, legends, saints, let me know. We're also approaching 100 episodes of Born of Wonder. So if you have any ideas about how to celebrate that, I'm game to hear them. So thanks as always so much for listening. I'm going to end with some more great fiddle music here from Craig Duncan. We'll be hearing now Morrison's Jig. So I hope you enjoy, and I will be back with you again soon. All right, I'm Katie Marquette, and this is Born of Wonder.
Here there is something more than just a transient experience.
It's about being. It's about the things that matter to me. It's about the white spaces between the paragraphs.
Then God said, "Let there be light."
It's a mistake you always made, Doc, trying to love a wild thing.